D-Pin's one of the reasons I'm actually so bullish on the resurgence of the home PC.
Right.
And it's because I actually do feel that, every home will need to have a some kind of compute unit back in at the edge where they're actually contributing to compute power and storage and earning because of it.
Welcome back to Total Value Unlocked, the podcast where we explore the technologies and ideas shaping the future of the internet and digital assets. I'm Richard, managing partner at Hivemind, and I'll be guest hosting this final episode of the season as we close out our conversations with leading blockchain protocols. Previously, our regular host, Matt Zhang, had spoken to Stack, Solana, and Avalanche. Today, we're rounding it out with Hedera. Before we jump in, as always, nothing in this episode should be considered financial or investment advice. For more information, visit our website or contact Hivemind directly. So let's jump in. Hedera is often talked about as an enterprise blockchain, but over the past year, we've seen a strong push to expand beyond enterprise towards retail adoption, developer engagement through EVM equivalents, and new areas like AI and real-world RWA tokenization. A key driver behind this expansion is the HBAR Foundation, which fuels growth by supporting projects building on Hedera. And today, we're joined by Charles Adkins, CEO of the HBAR Foundation, to chat through all of this with us. Charles, welcome to Total Value Unlocked.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and looking forward to a great conversation.
We shall do our best. You have an interesting background. Morgan Stanley, US Treasury Department, the startup exit, getting across then into the world of marketing for major consumer brands like Nike, Red Bull, Disney. Like, how did you end up here? It sounds like an interesting journey.
It is. So, the joke is that I used to wear suits all of the time and now I sell cartoons on the internet. At least that's my joke within the family. But yeah, so traditional financial background, econ and finance is what I went to school for. Morgan Stanley, US Treasury. And then I just went totally the opposite direction and, founded a tech startup that was acquired. And then because of the way that I kind of built the growth around that startup, attracted a lot of attention from some of the major consumer brands on how to position and market, I guess, more technical products to in-facing consumers. And that led me into, like you said, doing some work in marketing with Nike in particular. Again, like this is kind of a long-standing relationship with basketball and sports that I've had. I played basketball till I was 25. So in Nike, I specifically focused on the Kobe Bryant line, a lot of relationships around there. Make a long story short, ran into Mark Cuban, who had told me he just invested in something called Matic at the time, which, we all know today as Polygon. And so he goes, you should really check this out. I think with your background in traditional finance and understanding consumer markets, you should probably go work there. So started at Polygon a long time ago. Well, Matic at the time, then over to Aptos, and then, made the transition into Hedera about a year and a half ago now.
Well, it's great to have you over here. And so drawing on those lessons of the past, there's often that topic of Web3 onboarding users. Like, how do we do better? What is the right way of reaching those real users? It sounds like you have that experience and trying to bring it to bear for Hedera now.
Yeah, I think the concept of Web3 is actually so large, and I had this conversation with our team last week. It's one of those technologies where I don't necessarily see the onboarding of individuals as something that any one individual protocol can do. It's almost a technology that embeds itself in other ubiquitous computing areas, and then it kind of ages into the population. We were joking about how, when the internet came about, there wasn't a lot of people that quote unquote represented the internet and went around to the parents and grandparents of the world and tried to onboard them onto this thing. It was younger generations found it exciting. And then they ended up teaching their parents and grandparents how to use it. And I think we're in that same cycle where a lot of the younger generation is picking up on this stuff very quickly, especially if it's already ready built or inbuilt in other technologies. And they're the ones teaching their parents and grandparents about crypto and blockchain and Web3 in general.
Sure, that makes sense. We just have to show them the way, and they'll follow, right? That's
And I think
pretty
it's
good.
using being a lot better as an industry of using plain language and solutions-based language. We tend to get very technical because as the industry kind of started out, it was, this broad set of technical performance things that we could all kind of challenge each other on. And so it became very technical very fast, where end users just want to know, is this going to work? Am I safe? And, what are the verifications that we have here?
Now that makes it. We definitely don't need another competition of whose TPS is bigger.
Oh, we don't. We do not.
You originally joined Hedera as president, recently transitioned to the HBAR Foundation. You mentioned on LinkedIn that it didn't quite align with your skill set, but you took away key lessons. What was your journey to Hedera, that journey through Hedera or Hashgraph or what the right entity for those at home and through to the foundation and the lessons that you can take with you?
Yeah, I mean, I had learned about Hedera probably 2019, right after I'd, kind of gotten into a little bit early days in Matic, and I read a lot of the stuff Lehman was doing, watched some of his presentations on YouTube, and kind of had this like, oh crap moment. Like, this is like, I might be at the wrong protocol over here at Matic, but, so just really followed the technology until the opportunity opened. And, I got a phone call from basically the council was looking for a new president, and I had heard about it and threw my hat in the ring. And learning about the governing council from that standpoint was absolutely fascinating. It's, really interesting how much those enterprises actually do speak to how the network is governed. A lot of the HIPs that are approved are basically things that enterprises need. And so watching that governance in action was a really big lesson that now at the foundation, I can confidently go out to an enterprise and say, hey, look, like, this council takes very seriously the safety and the professionalism of how this network is run. And I've seen it firsthand. And so that's one of the things that learning that and being able to go to market with that full knowledge, it really gives you a lot of confidence behind what it is you're telling people.
Thank you. Yeah, that I mean makes a lot of sense as I've watched Hedera through the years from my seat. And that's a wonderful segue. You've done my job for me as we head from your background and onto Hedera itself, like how it's evolving, why builders should care, and what's ahead from the network. Because ultimately, Hedera has always been thought of by those that know the story as an enterprise blockchain. You talk to the governance model, why it matters, how that helps with institutional adoption. But there's been a noticeable tone change, I think, alongside that, not to detract from it at all, but there's also been this push towards prioritizing a broader adoption, being used in more places, whether that's developer activity, some more DeFi applications these days, gaming, real-world assets. You're doing a lot more. What's been the change of heart? Is that something you've seen firsthand from the ground? Is there a reason? And where are we going with this?
Yeah, the enterprises are still incredibly important, and I make a comparison to, Google, Google Cloud, Gmail. Those are all consumer-facing applications for the most part, that enterprises use, and enterprises can use them at a high level, but they also have some consumer products and some retail products that you can log on and use Google for, many different things. Hedera, in that same light, its enterprise use case is fantastic. But the only way we test the robustness of the network and we really see the capabilities of it is by getting end users and retail users to build dApps, use the network, transfer assets back and forth at a high volume. That really helps us harden the security. It helps us do a lot of things when we go to integration partners that are bridging and providing custody. They want to know how many user wallets you have on the other end because they're taking an operational risk to put manpower behind the development of bringing on a new network to their piece of tech, and they want to know that there's users there on the other end. Now, enterprises, again, you know, they're making massively high volume transactions. It could be incredible revenues. There's many times these large enterprises are really one wallet or five wallets. And so you think
Yes.
about actual user accounts, they only represent, you know, a handful of accounts, even though they're massively valuable accounts.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't get a lot of the feedback loop as fast as you would hope to improve the network by just a handful of accounts. You need a lot of activity across a really broad spectrum of people to understand how to build the best network, the best security, and build it for the highest speed. So that's kind of where we've had that focus move to, is just really the user adoption side. It's really to help improve the network even more so than it is today.
Right. And you know, some often when people talk about Hedera, the question comes up, and indeed, I think we've spoken about it in our past calls, decentralization. Like, you know, Hedera has been very clear that it's on a path to full decentralization, but we're not there yet. And some Web3 natives level jabs at it for not being there yet. Time is a long spectrum. So where, what is your view? You've been outspoken on it. Where are we? What's the long-term vision? How do we get there? Where is Hedera? Help the folks at home understand where we are on the path to decentralization and the steps forward.
I mean, I think decentralization versus permissionless networks are two different things. When it comes to decentralization, I would argue the complete opposite, that we're actually one of the highest decentralized, one of the highest Nakamoto coefficient networks out there. Now, when it comes to permissionless networks, there is a reason that we haven't gone full permissionless, let everybody run a node. And a lot of that comes back to the idea that we would like to understand the people managing the transactions of these important enterprises on our network.
Yes.
There's some regions of the world which participate in unsavory activities that we would like to ensure that transactions are not being run through those countries.
Yes.
And the enterprises that sit on our council would especially like to know that, you know, transactions are not run through that. Or when you're talking about government adoption where they want some kind of insight into what's been permissioned on the network, they're going to want to know who's actually managing these transactions, and that they were an approved person in order to go through and run these. Now, that doesn't affect the decentralization standpoint, but I will say that, you know, any old person off the street's not going to take the code and start, you know, running transactions on Hedera's behalf. That's not a vision that's in the near future, certainly.
No, and again, you know, the enterprise wallets, the enterprise use cases matter so much. And indeed, there are benefits out there from that granular control and growing up alongside the use cases and the users. So
there are, once you get into the hundreds of nodes and hundreds of people managing the network, there starts to be some depreciating technical value to having a network that large, where, you know, the complexity of transactions actually takes longer than it would if you had, you know, 100, 150 people running nodes. There's some part where that actually plateaus and begins to drop off.
Sure. I can see that. So, one that we ask every guest on this season, with your experience across a few different networks, monolithic versus modular, where do you stand on the debate? And, how do you see Hedera fitting into that and the broader multi-chain world?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's going to be a handful of networks that come out on top that are very specialized. And I kind of view it like in the city, view them as cities. You know, there's cities that are well known for tech startups and, you know, entertainment, you know, like the Hollywoods of the world or the Silicon Valley. There's people, you know, there's financial centers of the world, the London, Singapore, New York. There could be a chain that's just highly specific that works really well for financial institutions. And then data, obviously data provenance is a really big part of blockchain. But I think, you know, interoperability is going to be a very big deal. And eventually, I think most of these technologies will be obfuscated behind other top layer technologies. That's why I actually love, you know, the advent and the proliferation of AI. AI actually proves the point of why we need something like Hedera so badly. when you have to go to market and you have to have a proof of human behind an agent that's on the other side, there's only a couple ways to do that. And blockchain Hashgraph in particular is a great way to do that. I don't think we're going to have one monolithic linear settling blockchain that works for everybody. That's just not going to work.
That feels like the antithesis of the consumer onboarding pattern that you talked about at the top, right?
I mean, we would have some very congested blocks the amount of data that's being produced in the world today running on one chain is just, it's unimaginable.
Yeah, tend to agree. Horses for courses. Right, let's jump into the tech. So what makes Zedera a little bit different? How should people think about it? To run it from the top, let's talk about it. Hedera is fundamentally that little bit different from other L1s. It's not a traditional blockchain. A directed acyclic graph, a DAG. I think that is our first of the season, the first of this series, and uses this open source gossip about gossip Hashgraph consensus mechanism. Help people out there understand for me, what's so unique about Hedera in your view? Which bits really matter, both maybe from the user side, but also from the builder side, those putting apps out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you just mentioned in particular is one that, it's very different from we kind of touched on the idea of a linear settling blockchain. And I always, I use Bitcoin as an example. There's a beginning of a block and an end of a block. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that takes many minutes to settle, depending on how many transactions are packed into a block. Typically, somebody decides when that block is created based on, maybe their leader position as somebody of influence or has the most stake in a network. With Hedera, it's interesting because, multiple transactions are basically confirmed independently and in parallel, rather than waiting for a new block to be produced. Mm-hmm. That's why we typically have really high throughput, low latency. So it's really suitable for industries where real-time updates are critical. So when you talk about financial institutions, supply chain, things where you need to know things instantly as they're happening, and have that be actually settled, not waiting for a linear block to settle.
Yep.
DAGs work really, really well, and particularly Hashgraph. And, I think this is, so even a consumer use case, if let's say a piece of information on a social network becomes viral, or a piece of news across social networks. You want this to be able to go out in real time, updated information in real time, verified information in real time, especially if it's critical to, a national security issue or something else that happens like that. You don't want agents to interfere with.
Sure.
You especially don't want them to front run trades, execute orders in financial institutions. Cross-border payments, a big deal. I would say, especially if we're looking really deep into the future and we start talking about quantum computing and some of the chains that have some quantum, I would say, chinks in the armor. If you're thinking about computing at that level and you're running trading algorithms or you're doing cross-border payments and you have a block that takes many minutes to settle, you can imagine the amount of compute that, maybe... Some nefarious players may actually put into the idea to block, change, or move the direction of that transaction to their own bank account using compute. Linear blocks become a little bit riskier with the more compute power that's out there.
That is a very interesting point. And also you hit on, when I'm explaining Hedera to people, some of the points that I love to the fairness, the fair time ordering nature of the network, no MEV. If anyone's ever been worried about how to thread a transaction through and not get taken advantage of, it's okay. It's fair. Everyone gets the order that they appeared to the consensus algorithm. And indeed, Hedera's consensus mechanism, asynchronous Byzantine fault tolerant, ABFT, that's a great badge of honor. There's not too many out there that can mention that. But are there trade-offs with Hedera's approach in your view?
I mean, really, I've looked into it and there's really not. I know that sounds like a very slanted position to take, but there's not. And I think it's, if you go all the way back to the reason that, if you look at Lehman, Dr. Lehman Baird, one of the co-founders' kind of reason for creating Hedera, It's because everybody had, you know, they talk about this blockchain trilemma, and it's like, you know, you have to give up speed, you have to give up security, or you're not going to be able to scale. And years and years, he actually worked on this. He would set it down, he would come back to it, and he had been working on this for a long, long time until he finally worked out, you know what, you don't have to have trade-offs if you create it in this way. And so, you know, from the day that he created Hashgraph and Gossip About Gossip as the protocol and how this actually works, there's really not trade-offs. And again, like, it sounds like a very biased view, but there are really not trade-offs when you're working with Hedera.
It's okay. As is somewhat known internally and somewhat externally, I've followed along since the white paper days. I always remember Lehman and his thoughts being very clear on that, and quite alluring. Hedera's done a few things differently, certainly the pacing, the thoughts, but another one which has always stuck out to me, the predictable low cost fiat fees paid in native HBAR token, of course. But that's very different to other chains where the assumption is price goes up because everyone wants my token in order to pay the gas. Like, this divergence from the well-trodden path, like, help people understand, why does that matter and how well does that resonate with the larger scale enterprise transaction?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that being more than likely the lowest energy usage DLT out there,
right?
Don't really have to flex gas fees up and down based on user congestion. There's really almost no impact at all.
Right.
And so that's when we talk to enterprises, but even startup founders, when you're trying to go about building your business and you're building financial models, variable costs can be a really big pitfall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, budgeting, we understood that for enterprises, they budget several cycles in advance. They want to know fixed fees, how they're going to be able to get on about. I actually had somebody, one of the council members tell me, they said, you know, the one thing we appreciate most about Hedera is the fixed cost, because I can't go to my CFO and say that my financial model's broken because a monkey picture got popular. And that always stuck out to me as one of the funniest things. But now we're even starting to see, you know, startup founders where every penny counts and they want to build on a network. Are they going to be able to manage their burn rate properly and understand that at scale? If all of a sudden there's huge gas fee fluctuations, it becomes really difficult for startup founders to manage burn rate properly, but also enterprises to, you know, do any forward financial forecasting. So US dollar based fixed fees paid in HBAR, we kind of settled on this is the easiest way to give people some view into the future.
Yeah, that again makes a lot of sense to me, and there can't be anything worse than being successful with your startup and then getting taken out by just the price volatility of the underlying on the back of your great success.
Right, right.
That's the wrong way around.
you're doing so great, you can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, maybe there was an issue to begin with. Anyway, I digress. As well as the consumers, as well as the enterprises, developers matter. Ultimately, you need to get them on board. And I know the team have been striving for, you know, EVM equivalents, working really hard on that. It's a journey I've followed personally along the way. But Hedera has, again, lots of options. Native services, native primitives, also EVM, full solidity EVM and contracts and the like. How do you make that pitch to a developer to come on board and try it out? Like, what's from your foundation hat? What are you pitching people?
Yeah, I mean, I think we like for people to go in and play around to see if there's some equivalency there that they're happy with. I think people that have built something that's, you know, EVM, solidity based, they come in and there's existing tools, libraries they can use. And it makes it easy for them on a network that can actually be a little bit more performant than Ethereum. They start to say, okay, this is really interesting.
Right.
Again, that's, you know, from the retail side, that's where having retail users on this side, creating liquidity and TVL and those kind of things, developers look at that stuff too, because if they're going to go through the process of you know, migrating smart contracts and bringing all of their services over to the Hedera network, they want to make sure, again, that users are going to be there on the other side.
Yes.
I think the other thing that is really interesting is now we're getting to the point where, you know, we're going to have 0x addresses for Hedera. So, you know, we're talking about ERC equivalency in some cases where right now our wallet addresses are not like that. I think developers have been asking for that for a while, and now we're getting to the final stages of having that solution there. And so it really makes it to the point where if you're deciding between Ethereum and Hedera, it's, you know, linear settling block, fluctuating gas fees, or, you know, ABFT with stable gas fees and something that runs quickly and scalable. I think it's one of those things over time, the more developers use it, they end up talking to their peers and their cohort of friends. And they say, look, this is actually really good to use. And, you know, we have people migrating over. Our job at the foundation, we really just want to make it as easy as possible for people to say, you know what, like, I think it's time to move networks to something that's going to scale deeper into the future.
Right. Yeah. Come with us. Or as a part of the interop stack, rather than one monolithic chain anyway, there's different ways to leverage all these parts.
Yeah, there are people out there right now that use, you know, different front ends of a network, or they'll use a different, you know, programming language, a Rust or a Move. They'll connect it to HCS, which is our consensus service. And like, you know, there's ways where you can be a little bit more modular and still use the settlement layer of Hedera. So it's pretty interesting.
Absolutely. With that, let's jump into some of the use cases. Like, there's some pretty hot topics these days in Web3 that we've been talking about amongst ourselves for a while now, whether that's AI, DeepIn, you know, RWAs. Let's talk through them. See where Hedera fits in. I know, I've heard third party that you're pretty keen on AI. I mean, you mentioned it at the top, Prove AI, formerly Casper Labs, migrated to Hedera. Interesting to see, you know, where does Hedera fit into the AI narrative, the AI use case, and how do you see that developing over the next few years?
Yeah, really, it's almost a tokenization play as well as AI, because what they're doing is, you know, tokenizing some of the pieces that go into the large language model, small language models. You tokenize the inputs, and then once you have a model a way that you feel happy with, you basically lock that model and you have some version control over any further training or future training. And then you can also tokenize and verify the person who's entered in that information to the model. And so if a model starts acting up or misbehaving, you're able to go back in, check the provenance of how it was built, and actually remove individual tokens than having to rebuild the entire thing from scratch. So it's one of the first times you really have some sense of version control over, you know, AI models, which we think is going to be really interesting. The other side of that is just, you know, verifying what's an agentic based program versus who's a human. And that's just, you know, human verification when you're dealing with AI is starting to become a really big deal now. Yeah, so AI, there's a lot of different ways to play in that game. It's mainly Hedera is probably best positioned, I will say best positioned, to handle large volumes of data that's required for AI at low and fixed cost and be able to lock in some of these models correctly.
I see. So yeah, there's the authenticity and provenance around AI at scale. Something that you guys are well set up for as people compete with some of these centralized AI giants and perhaps just want a little bit of control or regulatory directives that they have to have control, perhaps.
Yeah, or you think into the future where you have an expert in a particular subject matter. And they build an AI model that basically represents them as a chat agent. They can lock that model, and maybe they sell versions of that on an AI language model marketplace. So now we're talking about NFTs being traded, but the actual payload of that NFT is the data of a locked subject matter expert.
Interesting.
You know, agent.
Yeah, access to said agent, or maybe a digital artist, another potential above.
That's right.
Oh, okay. I look forward to that one for sure. Deepin, like decentralized infrastructure networks. That's something. I mean, I have one project in mind. I'm you know, I'll let you let everyone know about it. But you know, what else is there alongside? How many of these are you excited about right now on Hedera?
Yeah, I mean there's a lot being built on Hedera right now around, you know, the DPIN area. This is actually DPIN's one of the reasons I'm actually so bullish on the resurgence of the home PC.
Right.
And it's because I actually do feel that, you know, every home will need to have a some kind of compute unit back in at the edge where they're actually contributing to compute power and storage and earning because of it. And then also to actually manage your own devices on your own network. You know, like right now, if I can take a basic flipper device, go through my neighborhood and open everyone's garage door, that's a problem.
For sure.
Whereas, you know, if I have a garage door opener and I have to permission that into my home network, and that's actually locked on the blockchain, and now, you know, other people cannot come around and open up my devices. Again, I really believe in the resurgence of the home PC. But again, like, you know, air quality, weather stations, there are people right now building like traffic and data mapping. So real-time user location using video feed, and people will actually be able to earn from that. You know, you're feeding that live information back into a decentralized mapping system that's real-time and people are able to earn from, and they want to contribute to those networks. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of others that you've seen out there too, but DPIN is a massive, massive space.
Yeah, growth area, and again, the static costs and fair timing really help with some of these use cases.
Yeah, they become very large scale when you're thinking about IoT devices and smart cities and how you manage all of those networks. It becomes pretty daunting with the size of data we're dealing with.
Yes, that is for sure. And RWAs, like, it'd be remiss given our finance backgrounds not to at least touch on RWAs, whether it's on-chain funds, tokenized treasury, stable coins. I think perhaps stable coins are the easiest to agree are an obvious use case of blockchains. How do you see Hedera with an advantage? Does it have an advantage in financial infrastructure? And you know, will Hedera play a role on-chain finance at global scale?
Yeah, I mean, financial infrastructure, unequivocally, I would say the fact that Hedera does not settle in a linear fashion in linear blocks, and I will never use the word impossible, but it's near impossible to front run a transaction on the Hedera network. I've never seen it done. I won't say that it could never happen given where compute goes, but
right,
it's probably impossible. You know, global financial systems, when you're dealing in trillions of dollars moving back and forth between countries, businesses, and individuals on a daily basis, having compute power into the future that could front run those systems and divert money elsewhere becomes a really big challenge. And so you start tokenizing those assets within the Hedera ecosystem. Not only are you able to secure those transactions in a much better way, but you know, that also provides a little bit more regulatory safety, I would say, with Hedera security features. And then also when you're able to tokenize and kind of fractionalize some of these larger assets, when you're getting into that world of, again, like algorithmic and agentic AI trading algorithms, you need smaller fractions of transactions, almost like streaming finance. So
yes,
the ability to stream payments and stream earnings at the same time become really important for like true price discovery. And you don't get that when you have a lot of money market funds where the entry point is 25 million or 50 million for an institution. You start to tokenize those and you get individual users buy, sell, trading the tokens or algorithms trading these tokens. You get some better pricing for the market, and usually it's more advantageous for the end user.
Awesome. All right. So we've done the now. Let's move to the future. You've talked about Hedera's potential as a trust layer, public utility for trust. Your words have been out there for sure. Like, where, if Hedera manages to achieve this vision, What does it look like in 10 years? And what's the biggest challenge standing in your way?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it looks like in 10 years is we don't really speak about Hedera as a standalone company. It's a utility that's built into almost every layer of the internet and technology that needs trust built into it. And, you know, like we kind of talked about, the idea of streaming finance and streaming earnings and payments,
right?
That becomes a real thing. You know, the waiting 2 weeks for your paycheck, probably not a thing in 10 years. It's as you work, your pay comes in, and it's almost, you know, like a fuel gauge. It'll move up and down, and you know how things are going. That, you know, that changes credit markets. I would say any area of technology, ubiquitous computing is obviously something that's likely going to take over the bulk of our lives in the next 10 years. I mean, everything from healthcare to AR, VR, IoT devices. The baseline of it all is there safety? Is there trust? And what is the proof of human behind who's actually right. operating these?
Yep.
It's something that Hedera can actually just inbuild into current systems or things being built, and it doesn't have to stand alone as a technology. So, you know, as technology rapidly improves, I encourage everybody to build in systems like Hedera just into their actual hardware, into their software, as just a needed feature to what everyone else is building. That is, you know, one of the reasons I always position Hedera as a commodity. It's, you know, everybody can have access to it. And I make the really rudimentary comparison to coffee beans. It's like coffee beans are not that exciting on their own. Right. You know, they're bought, sold, and traded. But when a coffee bean is purchased and it moves into a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts or, you know, another somebody who actually does something with it, creates right. a business around it, well, then that commodity mm-hmm. becomes really exciting. And so that's why, you know, when we talk about financial institutions or payment rails or governments or even individual, you know, startup founders like Galaxy out there who are building a whole new, you know, social network where it's impossible to be deplatformed. You basically own all of your data, all of your content, and you can move it wherever right. you want. Those kind of things require trust and safety underneath them, and trust and safety that moves at the same speed of what we would expect, you know, technology to move at.
Yeah, makes sense to me. I'm on board. So bold predictions time. We ask everyone, like, what is your biggest and boldest prediction for Hedera in 5 years' time?
Wow, that's let's see. My boldest prediction for Hedera is that I'll probably go out on a limb on this one because I'm not certain of it. We could probably see a governing council of 100, 120 members. We Ooh. May extend the size of that.
Interesting.
We could probably see many financial institutions utilizing Hedera because they understand how dangerous front running is,
right?
With the increase in compute power, that gets very, very interesting. There's yes. a lot of existing layer ones, I will say, historic and very legacy layer ones that are prone to these issues. Mm-hmm. So I feel like for Hedera, what's essentially going to happen is possibly many bad things could happen to some legacy layer ones. Right. And people will start seeking out who's had this proper technology all along. And you're going to see a lot of migration from other networks onto Hedera.
Bold. I like it. Thank you for that. And Charles, it's been a fantastic conversation. Really appreciate you being here today. For those who want to learn more, where's the best place to go?
I've been on X. I'm just Charles X Adkins, ADKINS. Obviously Hedera.com is a great place to learn everything Hedera, and reach out to HiveMind. You guys know a lot about us, so we always appreciate when we have a chance to have a conversation.
Yeah, I may be found in Discord somewhere, by other names, of course.
Of course.
Developing EVM tooling on Hedera, so I may have a few thoughts if people are interested indeed. Well, yep. That's been great, Charles. That's a wrap on our protocol season. If you haven't checked out our other episodes with Stack, Solana, and Avalanche yet, now is the time to catch up. We'll be back soon with season two and a fresh lineup of guests, so stay tuned. Follow us on Twitter at HiveMindCap to stay up to date when the next episode drops. Thanks, everyone.